Hare Krishna. I've been asked tonight to speak to you about a theme that is essential for every young man. Now, let's flash back in time to when you were just 5, 6, or 7 years old. The good old days before a certain tendency hit you in the face. Do you remember those days of freedom? Do you remember those days when you were carefree and happy? You didn't consider whether you were handsome or what style of hair you should have. You did not consider how the opposite sex was thinking of you. You didn't dream of them. You didn't even want to talk to them. Remember? And then what happened? When you became past the age of 12, and especially as you reached the age of 16, what happened? I can remember example from my own family. My middle brother, I watched him when he was 10 years old. I came home from school one day. I'm a year and a half older than him. So I came home from school, and my brother was in the backyard with his friends, and they were digging a big hole in the ground. So I asked, why are you doing this? Why are you digging such a big hole in the ground? It's like, you know, it's already 1 meter deep, and you want to make it even deeper. What's the reason? They looked at me. Don't you understand? We have to dig a big hole in the backyard to hide from the girls if they attack us. I said, well, why do the girls want to attack you? You don't understand. They're foolish. They're silly. We don't want to have anything to do with them. But they always want to do silly things. We want nothing to do with them. Then, 3 years later, my brother was 13. And I, again, was coming home from school. And I saw in front of our house in New York City a crowd of young boys, maybe 10 or 20, all in a circle. And in the center of the circle, there was my brother and another young man, and they were like boxers, you know. So I went up to my brother and said, hey, what's going on? What are you doing? Having these fights right in front of our house, you know? What are you fighting about anyway? He said, you don't understand. We both like the same girl. So I said, wait a minute now. What's happening? You know, the whole worldview has changed. The whole cosmos has tilted in just a few short years. So therefore, I ask you all to remember those days before the affliction of sex desire manifested in your body and mind. How carefree you were. How easily satisfied you were. And then, simply because the hormones in your body change, your whole worldview changes. Your whole life changes. This is victimization. Don't you understand that? Victimization at the hands of material nature. How many of you here volunteered for this change? Any of you remember? No, you did not say, I want my hormones to boil. None of you did that. The change was forced upon you by material nature. Involuntary. Slavery. And by the influence of that same material energy, we think that slavery to be delightful and pleasurable. This hormone-induced slavery, in which the conditioned soul cannot live without lusty thoughts, lusty activities. From the viewpoint of material science, the peak of the hormone intensity for a young man is when you're 21. Any of you here 21? Everyone else is under 21, yes? Anyone over 21? Not by much, though. What? A few years? All right. So the age of 21 is the peak of your biological intensity, shall we say. The peak of your lust. But it's not that after that age, it suddenly plunges. No. It goes down very, very gradually. Once again, remember the peace before the storm hit when you were 12 years old. I want you to capture your young boy days before puberty, before the age of 12 in your mind, and remember how carefree you were. Now, in your 20s, your mind is bombarded. Television, movies, songs, all stressing the same thing. And so naturally, because the mind is bombarded in this way, you're going to think, that's the way to be happy. And you forget that this is slavery and suffering to your senses. Hormone-controlled fever. Let us develop our Krishna conscious intelligence and not become bewildered by the messages from the media meant for unintelligent people. I know that you all have gathered here because you have some integrity, some good qualities, some valor, bravery, courage, discrimination. Therefore, we can speak openly about these things. Why should we mistake a fever for happiness? How many of you have enjoyed a fever before? Oh, it's so wonderful to have a fever. Just see how my skin is burning. Oh, my tongue is so hot. How many of you enjoyed that? I'll give you an example. I thought I was enjoying a fever. Yes. When I was 6 years old, 6 or 7 years old, my brother and I, we shared the same room, my middle brother, and I used to we both liked to get a fever because we thought fever, because we're sharing the same room, if he gets a fever, I get a fever. If I get a fever, he gets a fever. So fever meant no school. So we were so happy when one of us got a fever. We knew soon the other brother's going to get a fever too. And that means my mother, she was a private nurse. So she immediately saw if we had a fever, she would say, okay, you can't go to school. Not only no school, but ice cream. Because she knew, as a nurse, to bring the fever down, I have to give my children ice cream to cool them down. So we thought, this is great. Fevers are nice. No school and ice cream. I remember, even now, laying in bed, and my brother laying in his bed, and getting a big bowl of ice cream, and the tongue is hot from the fever, and the ice-cold ice cream is hitting the tongue. And ooh, this is the ultimate. So nice to have a fever. Of course, for my mother, it wasn't so nice because she had to do extra duties taking care of her children who were sick. Now, there was a problem, though. How could my brother and I control how much fever we had. Because there was one fear we had along with the bliss of having a fever. There was a fear. The fear was if the fever got too high, my mother would call the doctor. And he would come make a house visit. And we knew what that meant. Injection time. Yeah, we'd have to get an injection in the rear, and we didn't like that. So we were always praying, oh, dear God, let us have a fever, but not too high. We were religious kids, you know. We knew to pray to God. Dear Lord, there is a very important baseball game on the television this afternoon. We don't want to go to school. Just like you have your cricket matches here in the USA, there's baseball. So, let us have a fever this day, dear Lord. So we can stay home, lay in bed, and eat ice cream, watch the baseball game. But dear Lord, don't let the fever get too high, because then the doctor comes to give injections. Now you say, this is silly. How can you mistake a fever for happiness? Well, this is the question that the Vedic sages and saints, this is the question that Krishna proposes to you in Bhagavad Gita. How can you mistake a fever for happiness? Therefore, I ask you once again, think of those happy days before sex desire invaded your life. I also remember as a young boy, 8 or 9 years old, going up to couples in my extended family, relatives, and I would just go up to them and say, I would go up to the man and say, why are you with her? and they would always smile, and you'll find out one day. I would go from couple to couple, you know, aunts and uncles and older cousins, and why are you two together? What is the purpose of this? They would always just look at me, you know, and smile. And still, let us ask that question. Why are we so much hankering for this feverish condition? If you take away the media messages that are saturating your brain, then you understand there's something in this body and mind. There's this conditioning that's making me hungry for this fever. Now, if we look at the root of the problem, we see it's about pleasure. We think that the fever of sex desire will bring us pleasure. We hope, in illusion, we hope that by squeezing false and temporary pleasure out of this temporary body, we'll be happy. That's all in the imagination. When you look at the Bollywood movies, when you look at the television, when you listen to the songs on the radio, they make the fever seem so nice, don't they? And you, naturally, your mind begins to dream, oh, when will I have my own feverish partner? Yes? Unless you have a spiritual education, you'll be bewildered and you won't be able to understand how fevers mean suffering. First, let us understand that in Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, we are not against pleasure. To be Krishna conscious doesn't mean you repress your desire for pleasure. It means you learn what is actually real pleasure. In the Shastra, it is explained, Anandamayo Bhyasat. The Supreme Absolute Truth is full of pleasure, and the living entities, the parts of the Supreme Absolute Truth, the living entities are always seeking pleasure. You have this pleasure-seeking capacity within you. Now, can you erase that? No. Does Krishna consciousness mean to annihilate that pleasure-seeking capacity in you? That is a fear that I know many of you have. If I become too serious about Krishna consciousness, where will be the pleasure in my life? And the contemporary propaganda tells you there's no fun in religion. Religious people don't have fun. So that is what's troubling you in the back of your mind. In the front of your mind, you feel, yes, one should lead a good life, a moral life. But in the back of your mind are these monsters. And the monsters are telling you, they're roaring at you, they're screaming at you, just set us free, let us lead your life, follow us. What to do about the pleasure-seeking propensity? If you become seriously Krishna conscious and follow all four regular principles, does that mean no more pleasure? Krishna consciousness is about the topmost pleasure. Therefore, the devotee of Krishna stays away from the lower pleasures so that you can have free access to the higher pleasures. It's all about superior and inferior pleasure. Now you may say, well, why can't we have both, the inferior and the superior pleasure? But things don't work in that way. The inferior pleasure gets in the way of the superior pleasure. And the superior pleasure, because it's superior, it doesn't allow any room for competition because it's superior. Suppose I tell you, all right, I have a way for all of you in this room to enjoy pleasure. I want you all to stand up and then jump in the air and try to touch your head to the ceiling, and you'll be so happy. You're kidding. This doesn't sound very pleasurable to us. Simply jump and try to touch your head to the ceiling. And what do you think we are, little kids? But what happens when the illusory energy of the Lord, Maya, whispers or screams in your ear, you are the body. You will be happy having feverish activities with another body. If not physically, then mentally. Just imagine. Just think about it. When that happens, we think, oh yes, this is the way for pleasure. I've heard so many songs about it. I've seen so much TV about it. I pay to go to the movies to see it on the screen. Can you imagine that? You pay money to go to the movies to have your brains fried. To worsen your conditioning. To worsen your situation. In order to defeat this horrible monster, we need superior knowledge of the superior pleasure. Once you vaccinate yourself, inoculate yourself with the superior pleasure, you won't be so bewildered by the inferior pleasure. It's all a question of self-interest. The self wants the greatest amount of pleasure possible. In illusion, we imagine that comes from the feverish activity of sex life. So Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is here to inform you. You have better things to do than to be feverish. And sometimes that's hard to accept. You mean there's something better than that? Yes, indeed, there is. And because devotional service, because bhakti is the superior pleasure, once you properly situate yourself in Krishna consciousness, you'll be able to withstand the challenges of the lower self. Sometimes there is propaganda that the way to reach the higher self is to burn out the lower self through lower activities. How can you ever properly become detached so that you can engage in devotional service unless you first burn out the lower self by letting it go wild? No. By letting the lower self go wild, you will destroy your capability for higher pleasure. We have to make a clear distinction between what is the best and what is worst. Krishna asks you to do that in Bhagavad Gita. And if you take Lord Krishna's request seriously, then you can understand and experience what is real pleasure. One thing that conditioned souls have in this world is pride. I know what real pleasure is. In other words, I don't need Lord Krishna to tell me what pleasure is. I just turn on the TV, there it is. I go to the movies, I see it on the screen. No, you're not seeing what is real pleasure. You are seeing animal activity performed by human beings who have no understanding of what is their real purpose in life. If you are not the body, how can bodily activity satisfy you? Sometimes I wish to take all of you on a tour of the Western countries where I spend a lot of time teaching Krishna consciousness. Paradise-like places known as Australia, New Zealand. Where all the young men are uninhibited by the moral restraints that are still there in India to some degree, right? Their parents don't care what they do. Because their parents don't even live together anymore. Probably their parents never even bothered to get married, so there's no need to divorce anymore. So there's no family inhibitions. And there's no social inhibitions. You can do whatever you like. Will you be happy in that way? Do you think they are happy? Let me tell you how every day in those places I have to experience seeing young men your age completely wrecks mentally and physically. They're complete wrecks. Why? Because what you're dreaming about in your mind, they have been doing since 12 years old. So by the time they are 21, 22, 23, they are complete wrecks mentally and physically. That is the true reality of life in these countries. They have been raised to have no self-control, no sense control. And so by the time they're your age, they are physically a mess. They're so weak. Try to understand. The fortunate ones who take up Krishna consciousness, at least 50% of them have some physical ailment because of sinful activity done in their teenage years. We have to allow practically 2 years for them to focus on cleaning up their health because they've been taking intoxication, having illicit sex since 12 years old. So I have to see this tragedy every day. Can you imagine at your age being physically weak and so mentally feeble? They cannot concentrate with their intelligence because since they were 12 or 13 years old, they were just swimming in sinful activity, swimming in ocean of lust, encouraged by the parents. I have one disciple. He's uncommon in that his mother and father still live together. I mean, let's be honest. If the goal of life is to enjoy the fever, what does it matter if mother or father stay together? So, anyway, he was about 19 years old, and his mother, his father is well-to-do. He owns contracting, electrical contracting business. His mother was managing a bookshop. So one day, his mother, he told me this, his mother comes home from her management job of a big bookshop. And she says, she says to her son, "Hi, dear, how are you today? Guess what? I brought you some porno mags from the bookshop." Yeah, just casually, like, this is all part of, you know, normal family life. "Hi, son, how are you? Got some porno mags for you." He told me he had to, you know, because by that time he was practicing Krishna consciousness. So he just said, "No thanks, mother." "I think I could do without that." But the mother thought she was just contributing to the, you know, the emotional development of her son. "Hi, son. Got some porno mags for you." Yes. This is where a lifestyle of uncontrolled senses leads you. So those things that you're dreaming about in your mind have horrible consequences. So now, in Mumbai, in so many places in India, the television screen is full of all this sensationalism in terms of the fever of lust. And what can you do? The television's playing all the time. Your mind is filling up with all these things. And you're going to the movies also, paying to have your mind slaughtered. But I see every day where this kind of slaughter leads you. Once you toss out the Vedic principles of sense control, the Vedic principles of celibacy, then you have social havoc. Even materially, let's say you're not interested in spiritual life. I know you all are interested in spiritual life, but let's say you're not interested. You just want to be a material success. Still, you need the determination that a life of sense control gives you. As everyone knows, Mahatma Gandhi said, "I got the determination to drive the British out of India when I took up the vow of celibacy." And any Olympic sports coach will tell you, before a championship event, athletic event, they all tell their athletes, no sex activity. Because they know it'll make them weak, feeble. We are concerned, of course, with more than just material strength and ability. Our topmost concern is to understand what is God. As long as you engage in illicit activities, you cannot understand who you are. You cannot understand what is God. That is the greatest loss. But besides that greatest loss, there are social problems, personal problems, health problems. This is what Bollywood never tells you. What are the results of the lifestyle of uncontrolled senses? That burning fever of lust brings about enormous mental and physical consequences. So now, what can you put in place of that burning fire? That's what you should be asking yourselves. If instead of the fire of lust, you cultivate the fire of bhakti, devotional service, then because you're tasting the superior pleasure, you'll automatically stay away from the inferior, hellish pleasure. You all have such potential. I beg you, don't act in such a way that you are destroying your chances to make your human form of life successful. How are you going to resist the constant bombardment you're getting from television, movies, radio? How are you going to resist that? You have to make a plan. A basic definition of a yogi is one who uses his senses according to a predetermined plan. You've got to plan out your life. You've got to make a scheme how to resist this bewilderment. And on the positive, how to become more attracted to Krishna. You have to actually write out a plan. You can't just leave yourself to be ambushed. You have to think about it. You've got a plan. You've got to scheme. This is the best use of your intelligence. How to devise a bulletproof lifestyle so the bullets of lust will not penetrate your consciousness and annihilate your possibilities, not only for spiritual development, but even for material development. Sometimes some of you may be thinking, why these four regular principles, especially number four? So many people would come to Krishna consciousness if it wasn't for that one, right? Yeah? If things were more liberal, if we just overlooked number four, instead of speaking to maybe 200 persons, I would be speaking to 200,000, right? No, those four rules, especially number four, are there for a perfect reason. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna calls these rules the regulated principles of freedom. Because as long as you are shackled, imprisoned by the fever of lust, you can't do anything progressive for your life, not even materially, what to speak of spiritually. Try to understand this biological conditioning. It's victimization. Then make a plan how to rescue your own life from this victimization, this oppression. You have to make a plan how to do that. You can't just be casual about it. I'm sorry. I wish I could say to you, perhaps I wish I could say to you that, oh, don't worry about it. Just, you know, live your life and you believe in God, and then it'll all work for you. You have to change your life through adjustment as best you can. You must take advice, counsel, and then you can scientifically design your life so that this monster that's devouring so many people, so that it won't devour you and spoil your chances for a proper human form of life. So I know what kind of pressure you're under. I appreciate it. You see all day on television, you go to movies, you listen to the music, and your mind is just full of this stuff. Yes, it's suffering. You're hankering oh, how can I do these things and still be respectable? Is there a way? Because of your family situation and your traditional morality, you have a hard time just to go out and do these things as a Western young man would do. But your mind is boiling. So how to give you relief? The more that you can arrange for your life, the soothing balm of Krishna consciousness devotional service, the more this fire of lust can be extinguished. You've got to plan for it, though. Make arrangements. Take advice. Take counsel. You can't just believe in God. You have to actively shape your life. And then you can be successful. It is possible. How is it in places in the West, young men, in spite of having a horrible teenage life of doing so many illicit things, they're coming to Krishna consciousness? And you, comparatively, you haven't had it as bad as them. You're just thinking it all in your mind and trying in some way to put out the fire of this lust. So if Krishna consciousness can work for those who come from such sinful backgrounds, non-families, certainly it will work for you who have greater fortune. Try to understand how your mind is torturing you. I will tell you an example from myself, just so you'll understand. When I was 14, I remember just looking out the window of my house and seeing the other young men and young ladies in the neighborhood talking. It's a normal thing in a Western city. Young boys and young girls, they're speaking together in groups on the street. It's not considered lowly. It's just considered part of life, you know. So I remember looking out the window of my house and thinking, why can't I be like them? Why can't I just, you know, walk up to some girl and just start a conversation and be sociable? And why do I have so many hesitations? Why do I always have to consider what this activity will lead to? What will be the result? Look at these other young men. They seem to be so happy, spontaneously lusty. Why do I have so many inhibitions and I have to think everything through so clearly? Why? Why can't I just be like them? You know, let the good times roll. Just do it. Why can't I do that? Why can't I be like that? I remember thinking like this with great distress. I remember at that time when I was 14, I even, because my family was religious, I remember even getting down on my knees and praying to God, oh God, why did you give me so much intelligence that I have to think about everything before I do it? Why can't I be like those other guys? They look like they're having so much fun. But then as the years went by, I could see they weren't having fun. Once you let the uncontrolled lust monster dominate your life, you lose everything auspicious, both spiritually and materially. I saw that right in front of my eyes. And then once I fully took up Krishna consciousness in my very early 20s, and I've been traveling internationally for over a quarter of a century, every continent, every country, I see what this uncontrolled lust monster does, individually and socially. And now you want to go that same way? Think about it. You want to chew that which has already been chewed in all the other parts of the world, and it made them so sick. Now you want to chew it? What does the great boy saint in Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj, say? Puna punas charvana charvananam. This preoccupation that so dominates the mind, these lusty desires, where are they leading you? They're leading you to chew that which has already been chewed. You can imagine someone has a nice samosa and they take a bite and they chew it very thoroughly. Doctors say you should chew every mouthful, I think 30 times, something like that. They chew it very nicely, 30 times. You're doing just like the doctors say, full chewing motions. 30 times. And then they reach in, pull out, and say to you, "Here, my dear friend." What would you say? Disgusting. But that is exactly what is happening now in Mumbai, which is getting the title of the molten epicenter of Asian hedonism. You're getting the wonderful opportunity to chew that which has already been chewed and made everyone else sick. Isn't this disgusting? But I feel sorry for you. I feel sympathy for you because I know. What can you do? It's on the TV. It's in the movies. It's in the music. What can you do? I feel sympathy. I keep visualizing. Well, if I grew up in your circumstances, oh, I know what. I would be so happy that I didn't have to experience seeing the degradation that's everyday sight in the Western world. But now, all that has come here. And your minds are contemplating it. So much so that you're thinking, Krishna consciousness is not really possible. That fourth regular principle, I don't know. This is a great tragedy. So I'm begging you all to please think about taking steps to modify your life as much as possible so that you can be free of this monster. Be eager to receive guidance, to learn the tips, the facts for how to protect yourself. It is possible. Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is offering you superior pleasure to chase away the inferior pleasure. You are pleasure seeking, so naturally you'll want to be connecting to the best possible pleasure. What will happen next in 20 or 30 years? How far down the road, how much further down the road of degradation will Mumbai be? What will you tell your, if you have children in 30, 40 years, what will you tell them? They're going to want to do worse than you, right? In New Zealand, at least, I would say at least 50% of my disciples there, the ladies, when they were 13 or 14, they're very well-to-do, prosperous, respectable parents, the ones whose parents stayed together. That when the girl was 13 or 14, they told her, bring your boyfriend home, live with him in your room at home. Now you say, how could parents say that? But the parents are thinking, since the goal of life is lust, then let it happen at home. Why should our daughter have to, you know, go on the beach, you know, or something like that? We're a progressive family. Now, these are not low-class people. You know, they're, you know, the parents are property developers, real estate, you know, financiers, lawyers, professors. Mm-hmm. And they're telling their daughters, all right, you're 13 or 14. We see that you're calling one young man, the same one every day. It's lasted now 2 weeks. That's a good sign, 2 weeks with the same one. Now, we love you, daughter. But just we want the best for you. Invite him. Let him. You can. He can stay in your room. And you know, we're a family. Yes. This is quite common. I was speaking about this situation in Melbourne, Australia, and in Bhagavatam class, and one new devotee, after I made this point, because it's also common in Australia, I made this point, and he said, and he raised his hand, Maharaj, I would like to inform you that it's not all families who do that. My family was different. My mother and father, they're still together, and they were very strict. When my sister wanted her boyfriend to stay with her in our home, my mother and father insisted they could not stay together in her room. They had to stay together in the living room. Our family was very strict and very moral. So you laugh, thinking, oh, this is just too far over the top. This is just way out there. We don't want that. But I want you to understand what you're thinking about in your mind and what you're seeing on TV and in the movies leads to this, what I just talked about. So either you embrace the principle of sense control or you reject it. There's not middle ground, you see? Well, don't kill me all the way. Just half kill me. You have to go one way or the other. It's quite obvious. Use your intelligence to understand these social disasters, the individual disasters caused by illicit sex, and then take the steps to shape your life so that you can become free from that monster. It is possible in Krishna consciousness. It is completely possible. Now you may be saying, well, listen, Maharaj, we don't want to go so far down that road of uncontrolled senses, but Will, what's wrong with a little bit of experimentation? Right? Yeah. a little bit of Indian experimentation. not Western degradation, but a little Indian experimentation. All the experiments come at a big cost. There's nothing free in material nature. Everything has a big price. I appeal to you all to arrange your life so that you can make the best of it for the sake of yourself and the world. You all have so much energy, such great potential. It is possible to follow that fourth principle. It is possible. And then you'll see the benefits. Physical health, clear intelligence, and you'll become Krishna conscious, the greatest gift. What are you going to tell your children? In Melbourne, Australia, I speak to many Indian overseas students. And whatever you're experiencing by watching television and paying to go to the movies, they see right in front of their eyes, in the office, on the street, all around them as a daily reality. So I said, do you want to buy into this kind of culture? Is this what you want to be a part of? Because at first, they tell me when they come from India, from Mumbai to Australia, they think, oh, this is a free place. I'm now far across the ocean from all family shackles, family inhibitions. And now we can just do whatever we like. Mother and father aren't around. Grandmother's not around. This is great. Look at the Australians. See how just jolly they are, and just no inhibitions, no morals. Oh, this is wonderful. Of course, we don't want to be degraded exactly like them because we're Indian, but we want to find our own way of degradation. But I tell them, look, those of you have gone that route, because some of them have already gone down the road. I said, didn't it turn out to be the same degradation? At the end of the degradation road, it's not a question of Australian or Indian. It's just plain old degradation. They say, yes, yes, Swamiji, you are right. So now, for example, in Sydney, Australia, the overseas Indian students don't have to drink Australian beer. Now they have special bars catering to the Indian youth that serve Kingfisher. Just to remind you of home. And I see these students who have gone down this road. They're miserable. That much intelligence they still have. They know they're miserable. Whereas so many of the average persons in Australia, New Zealand, UK, they don't even know they're miserable. They don't even know they're suffering. They can't figure out what's hit them. Their intelligence is completely stolen. You have better things to do than surrender to the lust monster. You have the job of educating yourself in spiritual values and then demonstrating them for the whole world. That will be your glory, individually and nationally. So finally, I'd like to stress to you, with enthusiasm, patience, and determination, you can follow that fourth principle. You have to be honest and open-minded about how to deal with the situation. You need counseling, guidance, support. And you can handle this monster because Krishna is stronger than that lust monster. take shelter of the chanting of the holy name. Associate as much as you can with devotees. Especially Krishna as Lord Chaitanya is very merciful, extremely merciful. It is possible to be Krishna conscious. You can do it. Be shrewd enough, be smart enough to understand how your mind is being victimized by the media, television, radio, movies. Be smart enough to withdraw your mind from all of that and then attach your mind to Krishna consciousness. You'll be successful. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, thank you very much for your lecture. Maharaj, in so many lectures and my humble understanding is that we have to give this propensity to enjoy ourselves and we have to serve Krishna. But we have got that pleasure-seeking propensity also. So how to relate these things that we seek pleasure but don't enjoy ourselves?
Out of ignorance, you seek to enjoy the body. With knowledge, you will seek to enjoy service to Krishna. The material energy of illusion, Maya, is pushing you to serve your body. Take that same service propensity and attach it to Krishna. Think about it. Serving your body, serving your mind. It will not make you happy. That's why as soon as you go down the road of illicit sex, then there must be intoxication. Because the illicit sex is frustrating. It's not like what you see in the movies. It's not like what you see on TV. So the next step is you have to drink. And soon you have to take drugs. That's coming next. Watch and see. So it's not that you can just have a little bit of experimentation and everything will be all right. Remember, we'll just have Indian experimentation and not Western degradation. No, it all comes together. Package deal. Because you, the spirit soul, cannot be satisfied through lust. You become angry. Frustrated. And then to reduce that anger and frustration, you turn to intoxication. The Krishna conscious person stays away from all this and realizes the superior pleasure, spiritual happiness through service to Krishna. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for such an open and revealing lecture. Maharaj, in your lecture, you spoke about taking guidance, being open-minded, and making changes in our lifestyle to become Krishna conscious. Now, sometimes when we speak to boys, youth, because of their previous conditionings, they sometimes cannot give up bad habits like masturbation. And in spite of repeated attempts and being Krishna conscious, initially they don't speak, but after a few years of attempts of giving it up, they become very frustrated and they come for counseling, but they just are not able to give it up. So what kind of counseling can we give them, number one? And number two, are they insincere or is it too much of a conditioning that they cannot give up these habits? Or from our side, how can we help them and assist them? Because they're already practicing devotees.
I can tell you how in the West, where young persons are coming to Krishna consciousness, and that's not everywhere, but where it is happening, the only way that such conditioning can be broken is through association. Otherwise, it's too difficult. Too difficult. Somehow or other, young men, as much as possible, have to group together in a strong association. And then they inspire each other by that close association to conquer this enemy. I know that you all have many family obligations, family ties, and if there's some way that an arrangement can be made where such young men can live together under guidance, then they can conquer over this. Otherwise, it is difficult. It is difficult. If that can't be done, then you have to train your intelligence very strongly. In Srila Prabhupada's books, you receive the principles, the concepts by which you can understand this monster and defeat the monster. So one of those two methods has to be there. Otherwise, it's very difficult. I was telling one devotee from Pune, what is his name, Radha Charan or Chaitanya Charan? I was saying, I have seen things printed in Indian magazines like India Today that you will not find in a Western news magazine. Such horrible descriptions of lust affairs that you won't find in an American magazine of news. But there it is in India Today. I have heard about how the newspapers in Mumbai are competing for who can have them, which one can have the most degraded pictures. I was shocked. I was looking for some article about spiritual news in India. I was looking at, what is it, the Times of India and and right on their website there's these pictures. What is this? I mean, I can't look on the website for a prestigious Indian newspaper and without seeing such things? What's going on? So yes, you have a lot of challenges to deal with, but you can deal with them. Association and education. Very necessary. And then, as much as possible, you need the guidance from experienced Krishna conscious practitioners.
Hare Krishna. May I ask, Maharaj?
Yes.
Just one more thing, Maharaj, about this is, these devotees, they say that when they initially came to Krishna consciousness, they could fairly easily keep these things aside because of the natural enthusiasm, the joy that comes of coming to Krishna consciousness. But after some years, they say these thoughts, these habits just overpower them like ghosts or monsters. So are they insincere, or is it true that after some years, this habit becomes overwhelming for some people when they practice?
There's no doubt that for a young person, India is changing very rapidly. And our Krishna conscious efforts have to keep pace with the degradation. Yes, because devotees are compassionate, they're always thinking of ways how to address the situation, the degradation that's happening. many of you will have to learn by experience. Many of you will have to go down the road that so many young men I speak to in the West have had to go down. Of course, for them, masturbation, that's a joke. That's for babies. Infants in the cradle or in the crib, you know. They've had the full mess, full on, since 12 years old. Even at their invitation, you know, of their parents, go, you know, this is what life's about. I have one. One of my disciples down under, Australia, New Zealand, right before he became a devotee, he was about 21 years old, and he had a girlfriend. And somehow or other on his own, even before he started reading Prabhupada's books, he had it in his mind that these illicit affairs are not good. This is not good materially. And any spiritual future that I can see for myself, it'll ruin that. So then he told his girlfriend that we're going to stop all these activities. So then 2 days later, he went to the girlfriend's house. She's living with her parents. She was 18. And he rang the bell. This is a true story. And before the girl could get to the door to let him in, the mother came to the door and began to berate him, condemn him. What is this idea you have in your head? Why are you not with my daughter? Who do you think you are? Are you crazy? She began to berate him, like, you know, verbally assault him. Are you mad? What kind of man are you? These are the horrors of a society, a civilization that rejects Krishna's regulated principles of freedom. So, those of you who are grappling with this monster and you're having some difficulty, don't give up your chanting. You will see that this monster cannot satisfy you. And my prayer is that many of you who may be wounded by this monster, you'll gradually tire of this horrible situation and you'll just decide, that's it, I'm finished. I want to be free. So go on chanting Hare Krishna. Begging Krishna from the core of your heart to be engaged in his service. This situation reminds me of, you know, what it's like preaching, teaching Krishna consciousness in the Western world. Okay, Bill, look, we know you're really attached to your girlfriend and you just can't give up illicit sex, but just go on chanting Hare Krishna and you're going to find out that you're not really satisfied by these lusty affairs. Don't worry, Bill, we'll stick with you. Just keep coming. I can see things are going to be like that. And yes, the devotees will stick with you. And the quicker that you come out of this illusion, the better. But yes, these devotees, I have complete confidence that these devotees in this temple, they will stick with you through the crises. They'll stick with you as you battle this monster. And when the monster finally chews you up and spits you out, they'll be there to rescue you. That is compassion. Okay?
Krishna Maharaj, I want to ask one question. In the Gita, Sri Krishna says that we should prohibit illicit sex. Does it mean that we should go away from our family life? Or
Krishna
we should
says
not
we should
marry?
Prohibit. Should we go?
Yeah.
What specifically Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita is Dharma Viruddha Bhuteshu Kamosmi Bharatarshiva. Krishna says, I am the act of procreation when done according to Dharma. So if there is actually that activity done according to Dharma, to religious principles, Krishna says, I am that. Everything has its proper use, its proper place. As Srila Prabhupada once said at New Vrindavan, he said, unless our Krishna conscious householders have children, how will saintly persons appear in this world? Will they drop from the sky? So the devotees at New Vrindavan who were there at that time, they told me, they took it that Prabhupada was trying to encourage them in the only service that they could do. So this is how broad devotional service is. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, how to deal with the girls in the college? they are not trained in Krishna consciousness. They are eager to speak with us and make friends with us, and they are always together with us while studying in laboratories and other places.
And you have to speak to them, right? They force you to speak to them, right?
Yeah. We have to work together in laboratories, make projects together.
And talk about so many things. You have to do that, right? You have to decide what you want in your life and then take the steps to get that. If you simply do not have loose talk in those situations and try to restrict it as much as possible, what is wrong with that? Huh? Can you do that?
Yes.
As much as is practical in your situation, you try to restrict. Will the other students laugh at you if you do that?
Yeah. This girl thinks that this person is quite abnormal.
Good. We want that. That is victory. we can make t-shirts, you know, to distribute to you all. Don't talk to me, I am abnormal. And what do you care what they think anyway? Why do you care? Huh? Why do you care what the girls think?
You feel inferiority complex.
Why is your feeling of wholesomeness and your feeling of expertise based on what the girls think? Huh? Why should what they think have anything to do with what you think? Let them do their own thing in their own world. Why should you have your own conception of yourself come from a woman? This is victimization by material nature. You'll do them the best good if you don't loosely associate with them. That's the best thing for you and them too. Let me tell you another thing that happens in the Western world, in the Wild West. The girls have so many partners since they're 12 years old, from 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. When they're about 28, suddenly they get the idea, now it's time to settle down. We want a nice, loyal, and a man who won't cheat on us. Now we want that. But where do they find such a man? They have helped to ruin all the men, and then suddenly when they're 28, now they want a good man. You can't have it both ways, you know? So I hear this all the time. They're 28. Oh, where are the real men? Where are the good men? I mean, what do you mean, where are they? You destroyed them for the past 15 years of your life. So by your maintaining this strictness, you're doing them a favor too. And yourself, of course. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, I want to ask, like, the person who is practicing Krishna consciousness, other people who are not practicing Krishna consciousness, obviously their goal of life is sex. That is the highest goal people want in life. So when you say, when you are practicing, your intellect will go up. But still, you find your country with friends who are not practicing Krishna consciousness, friends who are not practicing Krishna consciousness, when you compare with them, when you start chanting Hare Krishna, your material progress is supposed to go up. Your spiritual intellect is proper. Your understanding that the goal of life is going back to Krishna, not achieving the material thing. But at the same time, you're supposed to concentrate better on studies and perform better even compared to students who are not practicing Krishna consciousness. But when if you realize you are not doing the we are supposed to do, so does it mean that you are not taken Krishna consciousness seriously? So it is not helping you to do your material goals properly. Can you please elaborate on this?
There is no conflict between your goals at school, your goals at work, and your Krishna consciousness, if you know how to balance the two. There's no conflict. We have so many examples of that in this devotional community. And there's no problem how to balance those two. You just have to know what you're doing. But as long as you can control your senses and you're giving in to the lust monster, you never will get that fine intelligence for balancing your life. That is the point. To balance the life, the spiritual and material, takes fine intelligence. That's why there are the four regular principles. So you have the clarity of vision to engineer your life, manage your life, so that the spiritual and material is properly balanced. But because of this lust monster, it seems so difficult how to make a balance. So therefore, we need information about how to live a Krishna conscious lifestyle so that indeed, by following the regular principles of freedom, we'll have the clear intelligence to balance all the different aspects of our life. And it can be done. We have so many, thousands of successful examples of that in this congregation. Thousands! So why should you say, oh, for me it's not possible? Thousands of examples on all levels of society are doing it. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna? Bahavo jana tapasa. Many, many persons have done this before. And you can too, Arjuna. So now we're seeing here in Mumbai, thousands of devotees of all ages are doing this. And you can do it too. So if you're having a little difficulty now, just continue with the process. Because you are a little bit intelligent, I know that most of you will become very disgusted with that activity. You can't go on long doing such activities with the lust monster. It's a short-lived future. If you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're going to become tired of it, of this lust monster. Not tired of chanting Hare Krishna, but you'll become tired of giving in to the lust monster. You'll become so frustrated. Of course, there's no need to go that route. But we're willing to recognize that some persons, some of you, you just can't break free completely right now. But you keep trying. If you keep trying, you will succeed. The devotees here are very merciful. They'll be here for you. Isn't that a wonderful feeling to know? These devotees here will be here for you. They're not going to abandon you. They understand the changing social scene now. They understand it. Because of their Krishna conscious vision, they can analyze things. They are reaping the benefits of living a purified life. Therefore, the intelligence is sharp. They can see what you're up against. It's not that they don't know. They see it happening all the time, more than you do. Just because they may not be, just because they're not acting in the way that you feel forced to act, doesn't mean they don't understand it. With spiritual vision of compassion and Divya Gyan, divine knowledge, they see how the material energy can pick someone up and just break the person. So they will be here for you through thick and thin. Festival after festival. Class after class. Counseling session after counseling session. So you're not going anywhere and they're not going anywhere. So you might as well get to know each other even more. Right? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. My question is, when we come into devotional service, or old friends, they also don't talk to us. They also sometimes ridicule me. They also don't talk to us. Girls, they are always far away. They don't come. They say, yes, go, abnormal, as you said. But sometimes boys, friends, or boys, they also say that he has gone crazy. And they also, they sometimes see from far away. They take a U-turn and they just run away. So how to tackle such situations?
When you become Krishna conscious, when you start practicing Krishna consciousness, you definitely find out who your real friends are. I can give you an example. My best friend, after I graduated from university, I started practicing Krishna consciousness. I didn't even tell him that I was doing that. I didn't tell him anything about it. And one day he just came to me and said, "What's wrong with you? What's come over you? You're just not the same anymore. I'm going to have to find a new friend." And I didn't even tell him I was practicing Krishna consciousness, but he noticed the decrease in the material enjoying propensity. And so he's wondering, what's happened with my friend? I didn't even tell him I was practicing Krishna consciousness. So they are sensitive. Materialistic friends are sensitive in that way. As soon as they see some sense control in your life, as soon as they see that you're not trying to exploit material nature, exploit your body and mind and others' bodies and minds, they get a little paranoid, a little afraid. Ooh, what's happening? So you have to expect that. And you quickly, in Krishna consciousness, you find out who your real friends are. But I'm sure that now you're knowing the finest friends in the universe. Yes? You have friends here? Well, just see how Krishna has blessed you. Who are your friends here? Yes. So you make sure the girls don't try to talk to him. You print those t-shirts. So yes, what you're saying is true. Yes.
Thank you so much, Maharaj, for this nice lecture. In the course of your lecture, you told that by getting higher taste in Krishna consciousness, we lose the lower taste of sense gratification. What is that higher taste and how to get that taste?
The higher taste comes through engaging your senses in service to Krishna, associating with devotees. Whenever you're hungry for some pleasure, think, what can I do to serve Krishna? How can I associate with devotees? Lust to engage things in Krishna's service. Hunger to be with devotees. I'll tell you, when I was in my early 20s, I had just started my attempt to be Krishna conscious. I remember I would be at my home and I would just pick up Bhagavad Gita. Whew, this is going to be good. Yes. Oh, this is so nice. What a beautiful book. Oh, just listen to this. I would enjoy. You don't see Bhagavad Gita that way. Huh? You think this is a religious book and you cannot enjoy it, huh? You're looking at me like in astonishment. we respect Bhagavad Gita, of course, you know, but to enjoy Bhagavad Gita? Enjoyment means television, movies, but reading Bhagavad Gita? Reading Bhagavad Gita is your religious duty, but you don't enjoy it. Is that the idea? Try to change that conception and start to enjoy reading Bhagavad Gita. Enjoy chanting Hare Krishna. Now it's morning time. I've taken a shower. I'm ready to chant. Oh, how fortunate I am. This is wonderful. I see now what's happening. You all take these devotional activities as like, sometimes like a duty, or in terms of, it's not something that you do to enjoy. Whereas in the Western world, when persons come to Krishna consciousness, they've been frustrated so much trying to enjoy what you're dreaming about. They've been frustrated so much that they actually come to Krishna consciousness in a pleasure-seeking mood. Since everything is going a little bit Western here, you can also take up that, you know. Yes. Bhagavad Gita. Ooh. Let's turn those pages. Oh, such beautiful knowledge. Oh, listen to this. So soothing for my mind. Gradually, I'm sure you'll be able to do that more and more. Yes?
Maharaj, I wanted to ask you, what is the difference between a bona fide relationship like marriage from lust? Because the basic aim of those two things are same. Marriage is also going to result into some sort of sexual pleasure only.
What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Dharma Varuda Bhuteshu Kamosmi Bharatarshiva. I am the activity of creating superlative children, God conscious children, Krishna conscious children. Krishna says, I am that activity. Okay? So if a young man is feeling the need to experience marriage, then you go ahead, but you have this devotional understanding, and then that is a very respectable situation, both materially and spiritually. Okay? Kirtana. All right.